This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Good morning, H-Town. Time to go to work.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Hope you had a great weekend. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. We got a busy, busy show, including Nick Caserio joining us for his periodic visit at 7:30 today. This will be the first time, Seth, we've talked to Nick since the 2022 draft class was assembled a month or so ago. How you doing
he's
today,
pretty much, he's pretty much a cast member on our show at this point. Right?
He's like Newman. He shows up on some of the episodes.
Yeah. He's exactly like Newman, except much more trustworthy, I'd say.
Yeah, and thinner.
He's more duty-bound.
He's like Newman, but minus the carbs, plus having cardio.
Yeah, listen, kids, and by kids, I mean millennial and younger. This is a Seinfeld day. Nothing but Seinfeld references
That's
today.
Right, sorry.
And we're not going to explain them for you either.
No, yeah. So how you doing, man? Did you have a good weekend?
I'm good. It was, well on our way to winning another pewter butte or whatever they call that thing.
Yeah.
And it's any victory over the Arlington Rangers is always one to be celebrated. I feel like if you hadn't gone to the game on Friday, this could have been a clean
100%,
sweep.
100%,
dude. We had to settle for 3-1.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I still haven't seen a run scored live yet this year by the Astros. Great. So, yeah, I was there on Friday, so that's my fault. But other than that, good weekend. Verlander up to 19 and a third consecutive scoreless innings pitched. Lance McCullers threw off of a mound. Not off of the rubber.
But in front of the rubber.
His feet were touching the mound. So, technically, he threw off of a mound this weekend. So,
yeah.
So that was,
he went from the if you were going to be aggressive and maybe piss off the grounds crew a little bit, if you were throwing out the first pitch, you might step onto the dirt
That's
a little
bit. That's what it was
like.
He's ready to throw out the first. Lance isn't ready to pitch in a Major League Baseball game, but he's ready to throw out a ceremonial first pitch before any future Astros game.
They're like, hey, good for you, buddy. You threw a strike. Good job. That's awesome. Look, Friday, don't blame yourself, Sean. Martin Perez has been phenomenal for the Rangers.
Yeah, he was really
good. So, you know, even in Christian Javier, who...
He was good.
What's that?
He was good.
Yeah. No. He's good. I'm having a flashback to just the fact that Calhoun is now 7-for-10 against him lifetime on the Apple broadcast, which is another reason it's good that you went to the game. I went into this with an open mind, Sean.
How was the Apple broadcast?
Sean, it was bad. It was really bad. And it's not Hunter Pence's fault. It's Katie Nolan's fault somewhat. It's the play-by-play guy's fault. I said, Ben, do we have – I sent you the audio of the Calhoun home run off of Javier. Yeah, let's play this just so you can – this is kind of a – this is the professional guy, the play-by-play guy. I can't remember his name. This is what it sounded like on this broadcast when Calhoun hit his home run.
He swings and hammers one to left center field. McCormick back. He turns, looks. That ball out of here. Off one of the advertisements, and Cole Calhoun continues to tantalize Christian Javier. A solo shot to the opposite field, and the Rangers are on the board first. They take a 1-0 lead.
Yeah, that was okay. So he tantalized him.
Does this guy know what tantalized?
I was like, was he sashaying around in front of him before
he continues to titillate Christian Javier?
Showed him a little. Is he a piece of apple pie?
Right.
What the hell? That's not the most glaring example or anything, but it was kind of that all night where you're like, this is like a bunch of college kids just trying their hand at broadcasting a baseball game. Where's my Callis? Where's my Blummer? Where's my Julia?
Steven Nelson is the play-by-play guy's name.
The football player?
No. The Houston Texan. We'll ask Nick about that at 7:30. How do you feel about your new free agent cornerback signing dabbling in play-by-play on Apple TV?
It was weird, though, because there was so much dead air. And usually, I know, you know, we've all said this at some point where you're like, well, boy, I wish they would just shut up and just let us watch the game. No, not in baseball, especially. Yeah. Like, give me some little tidbit or something. I try to be aware as possible of like, okay, got inherent biases and everything. I want to be sure I'm not like judging Katie Nolan on the basis of gender or something like that.
Sure.
I found it impossible to judge her because she never talked. It was like at all. It was weird. It was awkward almost.
That's one way to make the haters go away. Just say nothing.
It felt like she was scrolling Twitter the whole time and then every now and then would jump in with some tidbit she'd found on the internet about somebody who was at bat. And it wasn't even necessary. It felt shoehorned in. And Steven Nelson and Hunter Pence were very quiet for broad stretches of time. I didn't get the sense that any of them had actually done any research at all into either team, yeah, other than what they were doing during the broadcast, which might be why there was so much dead air. But it was bad. Some of the technical stuff was good. The picture was very good.
Mm-hmm.
They had a few technical glitches. There were times where they were trying to interview people and you couldn't quite hear them at first. The on-field reporter was very un-Julia Morales-like.
Okay.
Other than that, it was a boffo performance.
Okay, well, it sounds like I missed a hell of a time. It sounds like I did the right thing by going to the ballpark, other than me jinxing them into a shutout loss against the horrible, horrible Rangers.
This is what Amazon is doing right that Apple is not with their sports broadcasting. I'm sure Amazon's going to try some new and innovative stuff. But they're going with pros as their broadcasters.
Yep. Yep.
They're going, that's going to be Al Michaels and
Kirk Herbstreet.
And Kirk Herbstreet, yeah.
Which
pros. Is a little bit, you know what? That's a good level of experimentation and innovation.
Right.
That's Kirk Herbstreet's a college guy, obviously, but he knows what the hell he's doing. And
he's done NFL before. He's done a couple Monday night broadcasts. Yeah. So there's at least a little bit of a sizzle reel. Hey, speaking of sizzle reel, as we fast forward from Friday to Saturday, what did you think of Jason Castro's Circle of Trust sizzle reel as he brings his case to the Circle of Trust committee whenever we do the next one? Probably next week. We're probably due for one next week, I would think.
Saturday, he took advantage of a bad pitch and slid home with a nice little tap of the of home plate.
That was a catcher's slide right there. That was it. That was for those who missed it, what wound up being the difference in the game. That run, there was a wild pitch. Castro was on third. He had just smoked a double, and then he got to third base, and there was a wild pitch that bounced right back to the catcher. Like, it was, it shouldn't have been as close as it was, but they got a great carom, the Rangers did. But Castro slid to the pitcher's mound side of home plate and used his hand to touch home plate. And it was just a genius play. And then he threw out a runner at third in the eighth inning to preserve the win. He was amazing.
Brad Miller, was that Miller that tried to take third?
I don't know.
It was a stupid situation. I mean, he had a left-handed batter up.
Yeah.
There's two outs. Like, they've got Nerez right where they want him, and you decide to steal third. So that was a really good by Castro. There was another play. Oh, Brad Miller was a play at home. That when
Castro tagged him and got overturned. Was Miller the one who
it got over? It was he was called safe
was
and
called,
then it was overturned.
And it was right.
And then it was a dueling challenge situation.
Yeah,
he was called safe. The Astros challenged. It was overturned. Then the Rangers challenged and said that Castro's blocking the plate. And they said, no, he was not.
That's right.
Shut your mouth, you stupid horse.
Yeah, you
excuse
lost.
My language.
Yep,
yeah.
Absolutely.
But that was so this was the weekend of Brad Miller, Jason Castro, and Kyle Tucker. Because Kyle Tucker made that throw from right field.
Yeah. It was a good weekend, man. And we got my favorite version of Yordan Alvarez on Saturday, lumbering Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
Lumbering for a triple. So that was fun. All in all, I would say, other than me jinxing them on Friday, a pretty good weekend. And McCullers threw off of the mound. Let's get a quick McCullers update. Here was McCullers yesterday. Lance McCullers, for those who missed it, he is slowly progressing towards getting back to pitching. He threw about 10 throws from the front of the mound at what was not anything close to full speed, but it's progress. He's moving in the right direction. Here was McCullers.
This is a big step. You know, I've been throwing off speed. That was another big step. Throwing multiple days in a row, things of that nature. But, you know, getting back on the mound, feeling really good on the mound. I think I threw more strikes today than I would in a pregame bullpen, so that was good because I've been, you know, trying to be mindful of, like, my mechanics during the rehab. It's an easy way to, you know, get really like off kilter, so to speak, when you're rehabbing kind of the monotonous of everyday rehab, you know, getting kind of out of whack. So I was happy with that. Felt free and easy, so it's a big step in the right direction.
He looked good. Someone filmed it and posted it up there. He was out in the bullpen, so there was a fan or somebody that was filming the session from out there. You know, he like he said, he's throwing free and easy. We'll see when he gets up on the mound and what that looks like. But
we'll be the judge of that.
That's right,
buddy.
That's right, dude. That's... Click was watching him. This is what's going to scare me about Click. Click always has a look on his face like he's a little bit nervous, like he's a little bit scared, a little frightened.
Oh, really?
So Click was watching him the whole time, and Click, as I'm looking at Click's face, I'm like, I'm trying to read Click here and see what he thinks, and Click looks nervous. I think that's just...
No, that's just pensive.
Okay.
That's I think you're projecting there.
Okay. Fair. Yeah. He may not be nervous. He just he's got a nervous look on his face.
You're playing out your inner monologue of whatever it looks like when you're thinking / plotting, as I like to call it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because I get nervous about Lance a lot. You may be right about that. All right. So we are off and running on a Monday. Nick Caserio joins us at 7:30 on the show today. We got a lot to get into. This is the first time we've talked to the Texans GM since the draft, so we've got a lot of follow up on this draft class to do with the Texans general manager, Nick Caserio, 7:30, so make a note of that. Speaking of football, speaking of the Texans, Deshaun Watson is the Texans' former quarterback. Rusty Harden said this weekend in an interview with Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com that he is certain about one thing, and for Texan fans, it is a really important thing. We'll tell you what it is next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer, she covers the Browns, does a really, really good job. I had her on my Sunday show yesterday to talk about the interview she did. If you missed it, over the weekend, she did an interview with Rusty Harden, Seth. A pretty extensive conversation, and the big thing that I think comes out of this that Texan fans will care about is that Rusty thinks the league will make a ruling on Deshaun Watson in June or July. And he says this, quote, "The only thing that's certain is they," meaning the NFL, "want to try to get everything done this summer," end quote. That's significant because I know there had been a lot of conjecture along the way here that, oh my God, now with Deshaun fighting these lawsuits, he's not settling anytime soon. The two sides have agreed not to try any of these during the season. Oh my God, this is going to go into 2023. When might a punishment come down, if there is a punishment? Because normally the league likes these things to be closed out. I think once we found out that Deshaun was meeting with the league last week, it seemed to indicate that it was going in a different direction. It was going to go in a direction where we may get some resolution to this. Rusty kind of confirms that here. And what I did learn from this article and from Mary Kay yesterday, Deshaun met with the league last week, as we found out. It was 3 days that he met with the league, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of last week. And Mary Kay confirmed on my show yesterday that Rusty was in those meetings. So Rusty is in the meeting sitting with Deshaun and the league when they're going through these interviews with him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So Rusty, the information Rusty is gleaning is from literally sitting across the table from these folks.
Yeah, and you know, it's not, the NFL doesn't have a right to subpoena or anything, so it's always interesting in these situations where people. It feels like it's part of the legal process, but it's not. It's an internal company investigation. And so Dusty's probably got a different standard he's going by, where he needs to protect his client, but he also knows that his client wants to work for his employer or the NFL, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if he's able to tell his side of the story, perhaps more freely and liberally, in a setting like this. While the lawsuits are still hanging out there, I'm guessing he's probably going to be pretty close to the vest on all of it. But I'd be really surprised at this point if there's not some sort of a suspension. And now I'll be surprised if there's not a suspension this season.
Yeah.
So yep. It's just a question as to exactly how long is it, what will it be. Harden did tell Mary Kay Cabot that he doesn't think there's any correlation between the Trevor Bauer two-year suspension
yep.
and what the NFL might do. And I think that bears out also. I know all these people have talked about how, yeah, no, well, the NFL's got to, you know, they don't want to look bad in the face of what MLB has done with Trevor Bauer. MLB, I would say, has been more aggressive in punishing guys than football has, and it doesn't seem to have bothered the NFL much up to this point. So I don't think it's going to be – I don't think they're going to correlate at all.
Yeah, I'll say this just in response to what you just said about Deshaun and what he's saying in these meetings and what he – you know, what you know, the whole legal process may make him feel like what he can get out there, getting his side out there. He better get his side out there with the NFL. Like, if he's only got a few cracks at it to get his side out there – then he better get it out there to the NFL, whatever that may be, if he wants to try to mitigate damage when it comes to a suspension. Rusty did also say that Deshaun would probably meet with the NFL one more time before they arrive at a decision. So yeah. Chances are these 3 days last week where Deshaun met with the NFL is not, you know, it's not best and final in terms of getting his side of the story out there. There will probably be more meetings sometime in June.
What do you think about Rusty Harden's contention that their goal all along has been to get Deshaun cleared criminally, not win the court of public opinion?
I disagree with that. And I feel like there was a lot of what Rusty and his team was doing, understandably so, early on, that was PR driven. You know, when they had that press conference, I think specifically back, Seth, to that press conference that they had where Rusty didn't do much of the speaking. It was the army of lawyers that are working on this case for Rusty, all of whom were female, and yeah. They got up in front of the media and talked about how they flew to Deshaun's home and they sat with him for 2 days and they found out what a great guy he is. I'm totally paraphrasing here, but that was the message, I think, was, hey, this is somebody who is a champion and somebody whose teammates and his family and his community loves him. And they were trying to get a very positive image of Deshaun yeah. out there. And I think I'm glad you asked this because I do feel like just in reading the interview, you know, Mary Kay Cabot did the interview, so she was able to hear how Rusty sounded. But just in reading this, it does feel like Rusty is conceding that side of it a little. Like he's coming to the realization publicly for the first time, we're not going to win this battle. And that's important because they got this HBO Real Sports thing that's coming out tomorrow yeah. night with Bryant Gumbel. Several of the accusers are going to speak publicly for the first time about this stuff.
It felt to me like, I think Harden's always been able to use media to his advantage in more of a conventional route, where when it was all of a sudden him up versus Busby, I felt like it was like a conventional army going against guerrilla warfare. Your response is going to be inadequate in some respects. So you can either try to go guerrilla warfare or you can just say, all right, you know what? No, we're going to stick to what we're good at. And I think with Rusty Harden, I think he realized somewhere along the way, okay, I just don't have the same set of tools as Busby when it comes to this kind of stuff. So we're going to just buckle down and try to handle the legal side of things.
It felt like Rusty was maybe changing the rules slightly on what constitutes victory for him and his yeah. team. You know, whereas I don't know what's going to happen with these civil lawsuits, and I don't know how long it's going to take to play out. But, you know, the battle that I think most people are looking at now, you know, Rusty, the most important one was to keep Deshaun out of jail and get him traded to another team. He accomplished that. So, you know, if we're looking at it like it's a college course, you know, the final exam in terms of whatever counts the most for your grade, I think Rusty has accomplished, which is No criminal prosecution. Deshaun got traded. He got a huge contract. And end of subject on that. The civil part's going to play out over time. If, you know, now the battle, the imminent battle is with the NFL over what the suspension is going to be. And I think, in just in reading these quotes, I feel like there's sort of a realization that the NFL is going to punish him in some way. That's what I feel. Yeah. That's what the smoke looks like to me.
From a Texans fan's perspective, the nuts and bolts part of it is that, okay, the Browns hopefully will lose a few extra games because of that. So just from a pure football side of things, because which would mean that the Texans draft pick that they own of the Browns could potentially be higher than it would otherwise be. And the other part of it, too, is that the Browns likely really got away with their nice little ploy of pushing Deshaun's salary off into the future. So he gets barely, minimally punished by the NFL in terms of financial suspension money.
Have you seen their first four games are four of the easiest four games that I've ever seen on an NFL schedule in my life, the Browns. Yeah. At Carolina, home for the Jets, home for the Steelers, at Atlanta. Those are four of the worst eight or nine teams in football this year. Like, they could go, Seth, they could be favored in all four of those games with Jacoby Brissett as their quarterback.
Or Baker Mayfield. But also, I'll remind you, the Carolina Panthers will have Christian McCaffrey for at least maybe like 2.5 quarters.
Yes, in the first half.
A healthy Christian McCaffrey had everybody
Fair
saying,
enough.
Like, hey, maybe Sam Darnold's not that bad.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. All right, 713-572-4610. So that's the latest on Deshaun Watson. And yeah, if you missed it, that came out after we were off the air, you and I, Seth, on Friday. But yeah, HBO Real Sports with Brian Gumbel tomorrow night, interviews with several of Deshaun Watson's accusers. I don't know that we're going to learn anything new that isn't already in the lawsuits, but the optics of seeing somebody talk about it, I think, is what Tony Busby is probably hoping makes an impact there. All right, Jimbo Fisher versus Nick Saban. The steam has not diminished off of that feud. Why there is no going back now for Jimbo Fisher. We'll talk about it next.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
140 days away from Texas A&M and Alabama. We're counting down.
The hotel rooms, I remember I checked on Friday for any Marriott in Tuscaloosa proper. It was like $700 minimum, I think. And that was
you were up in four digits, the one you checked while we were on the air.
Was the best one that you could get. I think the cheapest one was a Residence Inn or something for like $750 on a Friday night.
Which
I would imagine. I mean, it's not a big town. And then you have any college. I don't know. It might be that like normally in an Alabama game. Any regular season Alabama.
Yeah, probably. No, seriously. Yeah. I don't think there's dynamic pricing where they jack it up higher because Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban are in a spat.
Because of that. I mean, if they were sold out even earlier than usual,
Absolutely. So that game is going to be it's going to be great drama. I think we know where College Game Day will be that weekend. I do want to circle back to this, though, Seth. I was thinking about this weekend because Nick Saban tried to, I think, defuse a lot of this with the apology on late Thursday afternoon, kind of walking back some of his comments. Didn't mean to single anybody out, even though he specifically singled out Texas A&M and Jackson State.
Didn't mean to single out two of the most notorious examples the topic to which I was referring.
Yeah, I didn't mean to single anybody out when I mentioned them specifically.
It was a disingenuous apology.
Sure.
It was, I didn't mean to single anybody out.
Right.
How about I shouldn't have singled anybody
out? Exactly. So the bottom line is Nick Saban went one way with this, and I think a lot of us were hoping he would go the other and make it even more of an inferno. Jimbo Fisher, I truly like Jimbo Fisher, and I don't know that he's compelled to go back at this point. He may feel great about what he said, and he's standing on what he said, and He obviously made a lot of accusations towards Nick Saban, both, you know, kind of directly and thinly veiled. But I think if Jimbo Fisher were to do what Nick Saban did on late Thursday, which is try to go, hey, my emotions got the best of me. You know, I disagree with some of the things Nick said, but I went too far, because both of them got reprimanded by the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey. He said both of them acted unprofessionally. I don't think there's any going back for Jimbo's in a different spot than Nick Saban. You know, Nick Saban's won a half a dozen national championships at Alabama, whatever the number is. However Nick Saban decides to handle it, Alabama's faithful is going to be fine. Jimbo Fisher has kind of galvanized that Aggie fan base, I think. And I think if he were to kind of walk things back a little bit and try to defuse the situation, I think there's a lot of Aggies. I don't know. We got a lot of Aggies that listen. 713-572-4610, text in. I think a lot of Aggies would be super disappointed in Jimbo Fisher if he were to back away from this now.
It would be one of those classic situations, though, whenever there's confrontation where you got people abiding by different sets of rules, where some people think that, you know, they got a bumper sticker that says "ain't scared," and any backing down ever or any kind of de-escalation is a sign of weakness. And then there's other people that I think would probably take the, I don't want to say the more mature route, but sometimes I guess as you get older, you start to not give a damn as much about confrontations like this. And you say, all right, look, let's get back to things that actually matter. So that's going to be all over the board. Yeah. But there'll be a healthy group of Aggies that want Jimbo Fisher to take this stance, to take this victory that they had in recruiting this offseason and roll this into something greater. And they view this as part of that. Like, yeah, that we're not here to kiss Nick Saban's ring. And I like those people. I admire that they're willing to say, yeah, we're not gonna be bullied by little Nicky Saban. We're here to set a new tempo and a new tone in the SEC.
So as an Aggie, it sounds like you would be disappointed if Jimbo Fisher were to backtrack at all on this.
I know, I really wouldn't. I mean, I'd love to go WWE on this and act like it was hellfire and brimstone. You gotta do this. But it is public now, and once things go public, there's a whole different set of factors at play. You gotta factor into, okay, how do the boosters feel about this? How do my players feel about this? And I think there's probably enough of the players that feel like, yeah, screw that, we're not gonna back down to Alabama. Where I think you can take it and use it. And it doesn't mean that Jimbo Fisher has to turn into some kind of WWE show where all of a sudden every week he's talking smack or, you know, pulling a Lane Kiffin or a Steve. He's not going to become Lane Kiffin or Steve Spurrier.
Right.
He's not going to just start taking unwarranted shots every week in press conferences just for the hell of it.
I don't know.
No, that came, because that came from, that was,
it was a direct response.
Yeah, and that was like an emotional, that wasn't, Lane Kiffin or Steve Spurrier will troll a little bit. They just got that natural arrogance where they're going to take their shots, where Jimbo Fisher is a bit more like old school football coach. So I think he's going to let it go, but he's not going to, so to speak, back down from
it.
I mean, he's going to let it go publicly.
So they at one time had a personal relationship, Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, at the very least, a boss and a subordinate relationship. If not, maybe they were friends to some degree at some point. Clearly, they're not anymore. Seth, if Jimbo Fisher were to apologize to Nick Saban, he said a lot of things that are tough to take back. Like, Jimbo Fisher was way more personal than Nick Saban was. You know, Nick Saban's explanation that, hey, I was just frustrated about NIL as a concept, not A&M and Jackson State, or more specifically, Jimbo Fisher and Deion Sanders as people. Like, he's leaning on that. Jimbo went after Saban.
Yeah, Saban was more insinuating things about stuff that the program did or that boosters did. And, you know, there's a gray area there with exactly, you know, what the actual laws are and what they dictate, all that stuff. So you're right. It wasn't a personal attack on the character of Jimbo Fisher per se.
Now, Jimbo,
Jimbo went there. I think the other side of it, though, too, is that like the reason that so many things stay quiet in the SEC is that because so many people are complicit in all those things that happen.
Yeah.
There's like a web of, as Jimbo Fisher is sitting there saying, hey, go talk to all those guys. He's basically saying, yeah, go talk to all those guys about the illegal things that they participated in.
Yeah, dude.
Good luck with that.
There's a lot of people whose phones were blowing up last week who were like, yeah. I don't want to take these calls. What?
Yeah, thanks, Jimbo.
Yeah, no, dude, 100%. I totally agree with you.
Like, because Jimbo's saying, hey, all these things I know that I haven't squeaked about, peeped about for years because I was there.
Yeah.
So I was a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go talk to all those other guys who definitely aren't going to talk about it either. Like, that's just it. Nobody's going to say a damn thing.
That's what's wild. I know it was like an emotional response to Nick Saban, but this is not like Jimbo Fisher stepped off a plane and some TMZ camera came rolling up to him and said, hey, yeah, did you hear what Nick Saban said? And that's the first he's finding out, and he goes off. He had a night to think about what he was going to say, or at least a morning to think about what he was going to say, and he sat down and said that. I'm with you. I think a lot of the things, there were a lot of coaches watching Jimbo Fisher on Thursday. A lot of them were entertained, and I've read plenty of articles from anonymous coaches saying they were entertained by all of it.
Yeah.
I do wonder if some of these coaches that were entertained had to put their name on it, if they would really disclose how entertained they were and how so many of them were probably like, dude, stop talking.
You know, it's like, it's fascinating when you start thinking about like how kind of so many secrets are kept, even though they're widely known about. Because when it comes to cheating and recruiting or anything else like that, I don't want to say it's a victimless crime, but for one, it doesn't necessarily violate the laws of any states. It can technically, but it's not the same as back when the mafia was keeping secrets wholesale, but they were also, you know, threatening, bullying, killing innocent people as well. Like, so there were going to be inquiries. They were going to figure it out somewhere along the way because innocent people were dying. With the SEC and recruiting, it's not the crimes are ones of passion that don't have real consequences in the real world. And everybody that would complain about the crime comes from an institution where either A, they've done it themselves, or B, in the case of Vanderbilt, they don't really actually care about it anyway. Because it gives them cause to be like, well, we're above all that.
That's right.
So, of course, yeah.
Just let us have our 2-10 record and move along, all right?
Do we really want a level playing field? I think not.
If there's going to be a level playing field, we demand there be a spelling bee instead of overtime.
Yeah.
All right, so of the things that Jimbo Fisher said last week in his rant, what are the toughest ones for a relationship to come back from? Like, if these two were ever to become friends again, which would be the things that Jimbo Fisher would have to most sit down with Nick and explain away, try to mealy-mouth his way out of? Despicable. He used the word despicable 6 times in his opening rant.
It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody. It's despicable that a reputable head coach can come out and say this. It's despicable that we got to sit there at this level of ball and say these things. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable. It's amazing that we're allowed to do those things. It's really despicable.
All right. So to be clear, that was a montage of him saying despicable. He didn't say it 6 times in 30 seconds.
Despicable was an interesting word to choose because I think I don't think he necessarily put a ton of thought into it, but it did have this effect. Despicable is not one of those words that's been overused to the point of having lost its value.
Mm.
You know, words like
it has been now.
I don't know, but in using it like specifically there, it's not like the word like awesome in the other direction has lost its value.
Right.
Awesome is supposed to mean like mind-blowingly incredible things.
Now it means
and now
good.
It's just turned into like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, you don't
it's
mind
awesome.
That I'm late. Awesome. Yeah. So likewise with despicable, I think it's I guess deplorable maybe lost a little bit of its meaning because it was turned into a joke. And
yeah.
So words like that, it's not as the same as you say despicable and you genuinely mean that person is despicable.
Yeah.
To
yeah. Like,
so that one hurts. Yeah.
1 to 5. How hard is that one to come back from, with 5 being the hardest?
Let's see. He called him despicable how many times?
6 times.
Six times.
In 2 minutes.
I don't think he come back from that one.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like, oh, you think I'm despicable, do you?
Six times. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, you want to have a beer with a despicable person?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd rather not. I've got my despicable business to attend to.
Okay. Relationship Dr. Seth Payne is giving ratings on how tough these insults are to come back from. Okay. How about this one, Seth? He called him a narcissist.
The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. It's ridiculous, but when he's not on top.
All right. So how tough is it to come back from being called a narcissist? I think Nick Saban, deep down, probably realizes he's a bit of a narcissist, right?
I think he knows he's definitely quirky on the human side of things. And that his narcissism is a justified narcissism in his own mind, as I think most narcissists would believe.
I'm not a narcissist,
Sean. I just see things the way they are.
That's right.
Which is that everything revolves around me.
By the way,
Nick Saban,
I'm really good at being a narcissist, too.
Yeah, no, that's where it gets like, okay, the successful narcissists are the most frustrating ones because a lot of the world does revolve around Nick Saban.
Right.
So, I mean, he's created a world where the world does revolve around Nick Saban, and he probably thinks that, like, yeah, whatever, you think I'm a narcissist. All right, great.
So that one's a two, it sounds like. That one's easy to come back from, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like, no, because most football coaches have, like, most successful football coaches, even the really nice ones, have some level of narcissism because it's their vision that they will not bend, you know, like they're gonna hold people up to their standard and their vision. So yeah, I think you can come back from narcissist.
All right, what about when you disparagingly compare somebody to God?
Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know.
All right, to be clear to God, I think that Jimbo, even, you know, he got caught up in pronouns and things like that right there. Like, I think he was referring to Saban that whole time, God.
It was very clearly a...
check out Ecclesiastes. It has a whole thing in there about what God did. Right there.
What was the movie? Was it Malice? It was Malice back in the day when Alec Baldwin had the God complex.
Yeah.
Somebody accused him of having Godplex, and I could totally see Nick Saban getting the same answer and saying something like, oh, you think I have a God complex? I am God.
Right. So that one, like,
I did that in my rookie show when I was doing my Tom Coughlin impression.
Oh, you did?
I reenacted. Yeah.
Dude, that's a bold move.
Oh, yeah. I thought I was going to get cut. I went in hard on Coughlin. I was a hero. I got a lot of respect from the veterans after that because we were sitting around planning the rookie show, and I was like, all right, who wants to do Coughlin? And nobody was like it. And I was like, oh, I'm the white guy. Let's go.
Dude, how nervous were you to deliver that line?
Not bad. I can't remember what the first joke was, but once that went over well, all I cared about was the adulation of my teammates.
Yeah. You're feeding off the crowd.
I had told him, I had said something along about how, like, Tom Coughlin has to get Clyde Simmons to sign the practice schedule before it's approved. and then after that, it was all good.
It was clear sailing.
So anyway, the topic at hand,
can the relationship come back from that?
Can Nick Saban forgive Jimbo Fisher for basically saying he has a God complex? I think you could forgive him for that and the narcissism thing.
Yeah.
It's the despicable part that's going to... The despicable part, but then not just... Okay, I take it back. The God part, if he had just said he had a God complex, that would be one thing. But again, he demanded that people go look into Saban's past. That's the part that I don't think he can come back. I don't think Saban can feel like he can trust Jimbo after that.
Okay, well then I think I know the answer to the last one here. What about when they bring up the words cheat, lie, and then condone physical violence?
Yes, I'm going to tell you one thing. You can call me anything you want to call me. You ain't calling me a cheat. I don't cheat and I don't lie. So I learned that when I was a kid. If you did, the old man slapped you side of the head. Maybe somebody should have slapped him.
Maybe you know what?
This audio gets better and better.
This is the big thing from two old boys from West Virginia. Remember that these guys, one of the great myths and the narratives and the legend of Nick Saban was how tough his father was. So I think that might have been the biggest shot of the press conference, was him basically calling Nick Saban's dad soft. I honestly think Because you know how a guy like Saban is wired. He's got, you know, he's got a complex psychological relationship with his father. And whatever that was right there and entailed, and maybe Jimbo Fisher knows even a little bit more about it. Maybe, what if Saban once told Jimbo Fisher, like over a beer, like, you know, my dad is actually kind of a pushover or something. Like, I present him like he was this big stud or something, but my mom's the one that wore the pants in
dude,
that family.
And then Fisher goes just complete nuclear weapons. Like, his father was soft. You know, you can ask Nick Saban. He told me we were having a beer at Frenchie's one day.
Somebody should have slapped him.
If this were the mafia, though, one thing that you would never do is get up and say, "Oh, go! Hey, I know where the bodies are buried."
Right? Like, yeah, dude. That's
the mafia movie where some guy thinks he's pulling a power play where he tells the mobster, "Hey, I know where the bodies are buried," and you're like, "Oh, you're done for.
You're about to be one of them."
I don't think Saban's got that power and ability. As powerful as Saban thinks he is, as much as he thinks he's the god of the SEC, I don't think he has the power to really do in Jimbo Fisher that way.
I believe Dr. Payne has delivered the verdict, and this relationship ain't coming back, it sounds
There's
like.
There's no return. If I were some kind of a relationship counselor, sometimes the hardest part for a relationship counselor is to say, like, hey, you know, you guys might as well just, quit on this thing.
There you go. That's right. Yeah, you got to give good
everybody.
Got to give good advice. All right. The Astros take 3 out of 4 from the Rangers over the weekend. There was a little bit of curious decision-making by Dusty Baker, though, in one of the games this weekend. Let's dig into that. Next, Nick Caserio, by the way, 7:30. So we're about 37 minutes away from the Texans GM joining us. Stay there.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.